listening to Gloria Minot Presents.
The Class of 74, Congress After Watergate and the Roots of Partisanship. It's out, Johns Hopkins University Press. John A. Lawrence is a former chief of staff to Democratic leader and Speaker Nancy Pelosi. He says don't blame Trump or Obama or Bush or Clinton. Instead, he credits the outrage generated by President Gerald Ford's unanticipated pardon of Richard Nixon 2 months before the midterm elections of 1974. That November, dozens of GOP lawmakers were ousted and replaced by 76 Democratic freshmen, raring to reform archaic House procedures and shake up politics as usual. And Johnny Lawrence joins me this morning. He's a PhD historian, a visiting professor at the University of California's Washington Center. And of course, he worked in the House of Representatives for 38 years, the last 8 as chief of staff to Nancy Pelosi. How does a deeper understanding of the mid to late 1970s help us understand the underlying roots of partisanship, polarization, and gridlock?
Many people, when they think about partisanship, think that it's a very current event, that it's a reaction either to President Obama in many cases, or when I interviewed people, and I interviewed over 45 members of Congress to do this book, the Class of 74, they trace it back to Newt Gingrich. A key part of understanding partisanship, however, is to look back as far as the 1970s, where there was a multiplicity of issues, and some of them come out of the efforts to reform Congress, because by making Congress more democratic, easier for younger people, less senior people to participate, the reformers actually provided a mechanism for dissidents, whether it was Democratic dissidents or Republican dissidents, to offer lots of amendments, to raise many contentious issues that previously had been suppressed by a more autocratic and more organized House. But that all happens at the same time that a Republican Party is reviving in the South, that evangelicism is beginning to shape many of the cultural issues that are divided, that we're seeing the emergence of an ideologically based media with the emergence of cable and talk radio. We're also seeing a lot of independent money entering the system that is not regulated by the political parties and that is financed by much more extreme viewpoints. So all of those things really begin to coalesce in the mid to late 1970s. What we think of as partisanship, which really explodes in America in the late 80s, the early 90s, and has continued ever since, has its origins there, and that's frankly why it's going to be so difficult to reverse this trend.
So are you hopeful that the more recent Congresses, including today's, that they have acquiesced their power to Presidents Obama and Trump? Have they?
Well, I think that there's a real problem in exactly what you mentioned, Gloria. One of the bipartisan traits of Congress, beginning in response largely to the war in Vietnam and to the President Nixon's control of the budget process, was a bipartisan effort for Congress to claw back some of its responsibilities from the imperial presidency. It had ceded so many powers to the president in the 1950s and the 1960s that it had become, in the words of one of its own members, Senator Clark of Pennsylvania, the sapless branch of government. And beginning in 1973 and 1974, Congress began to very aggressively seek to oversee the actions of the executive branch, to pass legislation other than that was the priority of any particular president, to conduct aggressive oversight activities. And what we've seen now is particularly when the presidency and the Congress are controlled by the same party, a real paring back of that oversight function and a real deference to the president. And that's moving in the wrong direction. Congress was set up as the number one branch, Article I of the Constitution, the lawmaking branch of government, and it doesn't serve either their constituents or the country well when it gives up those powers to the president, to any president.
I covered the Hill a long time ago during the time of Tip O'Neill, who was Speaker of the House. And I remember during the Reagan years, both those Irishmen would put their differences aside and work on issues that they deemed important to the American people. We don't see any of that today.
I think that's a real problem in contemporary congressional relations. We've seen a very serious breakdown in comedy, in the ability of members to work across party lines, except in the most extreme crisis circumstances, such as facing government shutdowns. We saw that, though, as recently as 2008, when I was chief of staff to Speaker Pelosi. We worked very closely, notwithstanding her and Democrats' objections to the president's positions on Social Security and Iraq, for example. We worked very closely in response to the economic crisis of 2008. But overall, that's the exception to the rule. It happens when there's a crisis. But other than that, we've seen such a reduction in that interpersonal relationship and that ability to put the ideological divides aside and work on a collaborative basis. Partly that's a response to what political scientists refer to as the ideological sorting of the parties. There just aren't that many people in the middle anymore. Parties tend to be either skewed far left or far right, and the number of people in the middle is diminished. So the ability to find collaborators in the other party is much less. And when you do become a more cooperative, collaborative member, you tend to become a target for the extreme money, the extreme grassroots within your own party. So there's a real disincentive to the kind of bipartisan collaboration that you mentioned and that I think, frankly, most voters favor.
Do you think that conservative House Democrats during that time inadvertently facilitated the rise of a new generation of conservative Republicans that we now see today?
I think a lot of what happened outside the Congress. It was the revival of the Republican Party in the South after the Civil Rights and the Voting Rights Act in 64 and 65, respectively. It was the movement of a lot of white working class to the South and the border states. Ironically, once the South was no longer legally segregated, many companies began to move their companies south. It was more conducive to, it was non-labor, the air conditioning allowed more manufacturing to take place. And so the Republican Party, which had been largely inactive from 1877 until the 1970s, really revived, and it revived with a strong evangelical and cultural base that was much more extreme. Interestingly, when many of the new representatives from the South start coming into the Republican Party, and here Newt Gingrich is certainly an emblematic of this group of people, they view their Republican leaders as much of the problem as they do the Democrats, because they see the Republican leadership as having accepted the inevitability of the Republican Party being in the minority. And their position is, we can be the majority. We now have these seats in the South, we are able to compete with the Democrats for the majority, but we can't do it if we're accommodationist. We need to take a harder line. We need to find issues that differentiate us from the Democratic Party. And they went after their own leaders, people like John Rhodes of Arizona and Bob Michael of California.
Yes, I remember that.
Illinois.
Yes, I remember that. I was there for Newt Gingrich's speakership as well. You call the class of 74 Watergate. Well, not you in particular, but they're called Watergate babies. Is it fair?
No, it's not. And I scrupulously avoid using that term. There aren't that many people who have written about the class of 74. It was this group of 76 new Democrats who came in and really helped change the organization and the operations of the House of Representatives in 1975. They're called the Watergate babies because they were young for the most part. They were, in some cases, very active. They came out of the student movement, the anti-war movement, the civil rights movement, the environmental and consumer movements. They were impatient with the slow pace, and they were impatient with the deference to the autocratic leadership, many times of extremely conservative Democratic leadership that had gained their power because of the seniority system. And I think the use of this term Watergate babies was a way to demean them, and it's as not being serious legislators. And that's actually not true. This group of people produced some of the most outstanding legislators, people who really impacted congressional politics and national legislation for decades. People like Henry Waxman and George Miller, Bob Edgar, Tom Downey, and Jim Florio. The list goes on and on and on. And so I object to that because I think it was designed largely by the people who were the institutional leaders to make the class of 74 seem immature and disrespectful. They weren't disrespectful of the institution, but they definitely were impatient.
My guest is John A. Lawrence, the class of 74, Congress After Watergate and the Roots of Partisanship. That's his new book. What about reforms today? Are they necessary? Well, you know, in light of the partisanship in Congress that has led to all this inefficiency, reforms?
One of the big problems that Congress faces, and it's a problem that spreads across the entire political world, is that we have, since the early 90s, been in close competition for control. That didn't used to be the problem. Democrats controlled Congress from 1932 to 1994, 62 years in all but 4 years. So there wasn't a lot of competition and expectation of fighting for control. Once control became the issue and the parties came into parity, then what we saw was a move away from what's called regular order, where you would go through the committee process, where you would have legislation that was discussed both in hearings and in investigations at the subcommittee level, at the full committee level, with healthy amendment processes, and on the floor the same sort of amendments, and then go through the conference committee where the differences were reconciled. We don't have that regular order anymore, and most legislation tends to be driven from the top down because of the need for that discipline. With the parties much closer in competition, only 23 seats in the House and 2 seats in the Senate, the leadership has clamped down and not allowed that regular order to take place. The most important thing we could do internally is to get back to that process where you flesh out the legislation and you build it on a collaborative basis, because it's legislation that's developed in that way, in a collaborative and, to the extent to which you can, bipartisan way, that tends to be reflective both of where the country is, but it also tends to endure better, because when the politics shifts back and forth, there's less of a desire to simply unravel everything that was done by the majority. But that alone is not going to change the problem. There are many, many other issues challenging us on the partisanship level. The one that's going to be the hardest to get our hands around is going to be campaign finance reform, and particularly the role of outside, independent, non-party-based money, which unfortunately the Supreme Court has given free rein in our political system.
Dark money, yes. And finally, do you think that the 2018 midterm elections will have a sweep of Democrats back into the leadership role?
Well, you know, I'm a historian, so I'm more comfortable looking backwards than I am looking forward.
Okay.
But there's enough of the politician in me that says there are a lot of parallels. You know, we've got a very controversial president. We've got special prosecutors looking into campaigns and into the White House, a long, unpopular war. We've got people angry with the government, Congress not doing its job aggressively. So we've got a lot of very aggressive candidates, many of them not political veterans, many of them women. And so a lot of the conditions look like 1974, but there are a lot of differences from that political environment as well. So I think there's reason to be very upbeat if you're a Democrat, but it certainly is it's certainly very difficult to predict the outcome this fall. Main thing is people have to come out and vote, because it's an off-year election, and that's where we see that huge drop-off in participation. It's very hard to win election if your voters don't vote. So I guess that would be the number one factor that we would want to focus on.
John A. Lawrence's book, The Class of 74, Congress After Watergate and the Roots of Partisanship. Thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Take care.
For more information about Gloria Minot Presents, go to gloriaminotpresents, one word, dot com.